That leads us to actually investigating life. So we're going to utilize this five-step method for investigating life. And for those of you who have known me for a while and were with me when this method came through quite a while ago, we investigated the subject of mind, of spirit, of soul, and of principle. Ultimately, it found its name when I did principle and called itself scientific prayer. So today, we're investigating life. This is a subject that's really complete unto itself. You don't really have to have done the other four preceding, but if you have, it just makes it all the richer and all the more alive within. So, because of that, this was structured as a prayer. And therefore, this fifth prayer, I'm going to give a summary for. And in your books that you have, on the next page, which I believe is page four, even though the pages aren't numbered, it's very free-flowing, I invite you to read along with me, if you wish. We will take it section by section. This prayer of life is broken into seven sections. And for those of you who are familiar with the tonalities of the seven, it will not surprise you to know that those sections are equivalent to the mind of life, the spirit of life, the soul of life, the principle of life, the life of life, the truth of life, and the love of life. And for the sake of clarity, what we're going to do today is just read a whole section. I will read it out loud. You can follow. We're just going to read it straight through, without stopping, without my commenting, without anything, just to get a feel for it, an overview of the tone that is presented in that place value. So that when I'm through, even if you don't remember any of the specifics or they're not really coming to you, you will have kind of a sense of the mind of life, and you'll have a tone that starts to ring inside of you. And after that, I'll go back and we'll just kind of go down and see what pops up and emphasize it and love it and take it into consideration and see what happens with it. So, come with me now. This overview of all five steps. Prayer is being as life intends. It is deriving one's input solely from life, living in the timelessness of the eternal now, the spacelessness of the omnipresent here. It is being one with life's principle, interpreting all that exists through its science. It is going the way of life, spontaneously progressing, mutating, transforming, spiraling onward and upward forever new. It is living as we are intended to live, being as we are ordained to be. And that's, of course, a very small overview and epitome of the entire sevenfold sense of life. And now, that being such a mouthful and such a heady thing to do, we, because we seem to believe that we are mortal, need a little help along the way. And we need to investigate it with a stronger microscope. And so we need to get in. And the first question comes up is, by what means is this beingness established within me? I mean, it's great to say, well, it is, but how do I do this? Science must be practical. It must actually give us the technique for attaining spirituality not just desiring it or wanting it or wishing for it or having faith that it exists, but really give us the technique to go within. So that's what this is here. All right. In the first position, the means is thus, by dispelling the mythology of material creation. Ask. Now these are those penetrating spiritual questions that one is putting to consciousness. And there are a whole series of them here that represent this place value of dispelling the mythology of material creation. What do I know of life, or the animating principle which ushered me into existence? What do I know of the formative causation of my being or that of the universe? I seem to live, but what has begotten that life? What conceived me and brought me forth? What encoded me in its image? Was it a human father and mother programming me with their ancestral genetic code? Was it the evolutionary morphogenetic process that started with the Big Bang? Or was it a creative force beyond the confinement of the material realm, an all-powerful life force generating expressions of its eternal isness, coding them with the fundamental information that makes up the building blocks of its being? Which is true? Which lies at my core? Which will I discover when I'm finally able to penetrate the mythological layers that shroud my true genesis? I want to know, to no longer be fooled by blind adherence to codes that may be false, that induce me to reflect a form unlike that for which I was intended. I would seek my true source, that which ever conceives me. I would penetrate the veils of mystery until I relocate that seed plot wherein I am authored. There to rediscover the fundamental elements of my being, reopening to the order of their arrangement, to the underlying code which programs and predetermines my life, I would re-engage the causal law of my genesis. Lock in until its power fully actuates me, until I'm no longer subject to a misconception, an unwritten code, a warped imitation of an eclipsed original, no longer duped into masquerading as a caricature of the genuine model of my being. This desire cannot go unheeded. For that which has the power to conceive and originate life, that which can tap into the well of its own resources in order to bring forth that life, can never bring forth expressions antithetical to its own. As it reflects upon itself, it can only see what it is, be in a state of self-revelation, lifting to the surface of its attention images of its being, likenesses of its own divine model, which it cannot help but express. These models alone, then, must inhabit the universe. At the core of all must lie their common code, testifying to that which generates their existence. All other codes, all other models must be a mirage, condemned to oblivion the instant they are recognized as such. Let that instant be now. It can, for the information which undergirds the universe, that which is imprinted at its core, can never be cut off from that universe. It is an integral and everlasting part of its being, rooted in the deep and abiding intelligence of the mind that conceives it. It cannot be lost to that mind or to its creation. As such, the universe cannot remain in the dark with regards to its formative causation, or forever fail to access the encoding which lies at its core. Its innate intelligence will urge it to seek the information it seems to have lost. not letting it rest until it finds its cause, its creator, that which coded it after its own kind. Through a light that comes from within, it will follow the threads until it uncovers the true source of its life, that which engenders it, formatting and giving unto it unique, individualized expression. It must be so. It must be so. For in the infinite self-genesis of the first and only creator, there is no room for self-deception, no potential in its unlimited mind to conceive in confinement, to generate a creation unlike itself, or abandon or exile that creation in the process of generation, excluding it from its mighty sphere of influence. No. It must be that we, its creation, have unwittingly lost touch with the force that endows us, disengaging from the deep-seated law of our genesis, experiencing the workings of that law through the deceptive warps of our own departure. In our drift, we have accepted these aberrations as if they were real, as if they stem directly from the true genetic law, from the basic creative impulsion which generates our life, whereas they have only been a product of our drift and of the myriad consequences of that drift, consequences which self-destruct as we lift out of their illusionary sphere of influence, re-engaging the full might of the law of our eternal creation. So there you have an overview of what it means to dispel the mythology of material creation. And I think it's good that we just get a tone of what's involved before we go back and analyze it more closely, put a stronger microscope on it. We in the science of being give very easy lip service to the fact that we are divinely created and the fact that we are divine idea and that life has impelled our life. We just say this, and we not only have the concept of it, but honestly, we believe in our heart that that is true. But when we go deeper and we're really having to meet the practical implications of that, how often do we feel constricted by the DNA of our particular ancestral bearing? I mean, it's as superficial as our body type and our hair color and our eyes, and as costly to us sometimes as the predilections of the DNA. And you hear it every day on the media. Well, cancer runs in my family. Well, heart disease runs in my family. Well, this does. Well, that does. Well, something else does. It's the collective human mind ascribing total credence to the fact that we are genetically produced, and that whatever the genes write, whatever that encoding is that is implanted within what appears to be our genes, that is how we're going to live out our life. That we're going to have a short life or a long life, we're going to have a healthy life or an unhealthy life, whatever it is. So even those of us who have been consecrated to Christian Science and the Science of Being, even though we give really more than lip service, we really do believe that we are divinely conceived, we somehow also believe that we are genetically conceived and morphogenetically conceived. And morphogenetically indicating all that has ever gone on in the memory bank since the advent of the Big Bang. Anything that has gone on, from the gases forming to the molecules forming to amphibians to anything that has gone on within evolution is in that memory bank. Anything that has brought us to the point of believing that we are Homo sapien man is in that memory bank. And so we have two things going here. One is the DNA of our particular, specific ancestral heritage, and the other is the general belief of being Homo sapien, the general evolutionary belief. And to work out of that cannot be done metaphysically or so simply. We need to really desire within our deepest heart, scientific obstetrics, we need to really go within and ask these questions as I have here. I want to know, to no longer be fooled by blind adherence to codes that may be false. I mean, if I'm accepting that the DNA is a code or that morphogenesis is a code, I'm accepting that, and by accepting it, I look like what I look like sitting here. So I'm lying if I say that to some degree I am not accepting those codes as being the codes of my being. I mean, let's be frank and honest about it. Some part of me must be accepting those codes as mine, or I wouldn't be sitting here in this form. I would truly be in a different form. So deep within, I need to really want and be willing to give up the influence that these codes are making on me. That is a really tall order. We say, oh, sure, that's fine, but are we really willing? Do we really want to give up this sense of ourselves, this body, this life that we're in? I mean, probably not to some degree, or maybe yes, maybe we're really anxious to metamorphosize. But the fact of the matter is, somewhere inside of us, we need to find a really deep, true, honest desire to no longer evidence a false code and to go so deeply within ourselves that we discover the true code. And I believe that that's what Mrs. Eddy was doing when she wrote Science and Health and when she was so inspired. I really can see that she tapped into something that was much deeper than the recordings of those codes. And she understood that at core, she was encoded differently. She didn't use this language. This is current day computer language, coding, encoding, program, etc. But the fact of the matter is that like her, we need to make that journey. And we need to peel off layer by layer by layer until we access that the real, true, fundamental building blocks of our being. And I believe that that's what she discovered when she discovered that God is mind and spirit and soul and principle and life and truth and love. I think those are the major building blocks of our being, because that which God is that which I am. That which life is, as we've just heard in here, it reflects upon itself. What can it bring forth if not what it sees about itself? It is not possible for a dog to bring forth a frog. You know, it doesn't happen that way. So if being, whatever you want to call it, I mean, God is just a term, a name, but if being is truly self-reflective, and it reflects in upon itself, and it reveals to itself from within itself what it is, it can only see what it is and thereby reveal what it is and thereby appear to create what it is. So therefore, whatever it is that which we are. And therefore, in order to find my true building blocks, I'm also discovering what the building blocks are of being itself. Because they can't be separated. There is only one being, and that being, as it reflects upon itself, is bringing forth its creation, and that creation is a reflection of itself. So I cannot be anything different. So somewhere deep inside of me, that code is written. And my job here in this first instance is to access those building blocks and to access that code and to say, okay, what is mind? What is spirit? What is soul? What is principle? What is life? What is truth? What is love? What does this mean? What is this that I really am? And then access the fact that one is eternal and divine and supreme and infinite. Then you're getting the full model that is encoded within us. And that is our journey here. That is our job here. If we truly are dispelling the mythology of material creation, the only way we can do it is to access the true creation, to access our divine creation. And it sounds very heady, I know, but it really is very practical. It is very, very, very supremely practical, because the more I access the true building blocks of my being, the more I access the true codes that underwrite my being, the more I allow them to express as me, the less the caricature of me will express. And that is the process, ultimately, of our unveiling the lies about life within us. And so I have to start somewhere. And that's where I start, by turning within and going deeply enough within to discover those codes. And you know, it's very interesting, because we can say, well, all right, we read it in a book. You know, Mrs. Eddy discovered it from within herself. The prophets and the biblical scholars discovered it within themselves, and they put it forth in one form or another, be it the days of creation or whatever, and she put it forth in the form that she did. And so that's outside of me. And yes, if I'm reading it in a book, that is outside of me. But on the other hand, don't we read a lot of things every day? And it's only those things that we go, yeah, oh, that resonates with me. I really sense truth in that. I really sense that that's real. I sense, oh, yeah, that feels right. And that's how we do it. It's that inner sense. And where does it come from? It comes from our being, from the reality of what we really are. So the reality of what we really are, our underlying code, is always sending us its message. It's always bleeping to us its message. It's underwritten in our being. And therefore, any time we access that, it will go, yeah, you know, and we'll feel that through the entirety of our being, and it'll feel right, and it'll feel real. And therefore, investigating it, even intellectually at first, is going to feel good. And it's going to be part of the process of dispelling the mythology of material creation, to access those fundamental building blocks. And the wonder and the glory of this is that it is absolutely guaranteed that we will have success. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely guaranteed that we will be successful. And that's the great thing of this journey. Because the information which undergirds the universe, that which is imprinted at its core, can never be cut off from that universe. That is the point. So therefore, we've never been cut off from it. It's inside of us, and because it's inside of us, we can rediscover it. And because we can, we will. And it's a foregone conclusion that we will. But, you know, if I'm out thinking about something else or doing something else, it may take, you know, if my focus is too diversified, it may take me what appears to be time, we'll get into time later, before I access those codes. So I think it is absolutely, stupendously wonderful that I am guaranteed success in doing this. And because I know that I'm guaranteed success, I do it with a very joyous heart. And I do it with the expectation that life is going to show me at each point that which I really am. And it's going to unveil its secrets for me. and it's going to give me the true sense of my being. It's going to show me the true sense of its creation as me. I really believe deeply that this is so. And I can, because the genesis, the infinite self-genesis of the first and only creator, as I said here, cannot deceive itself. You know, that which being is, that which life is so true and so real and so complete that it cannot deceive itself. There is no deception in it. Therefore, it cannot bring forth anything in confinement. And isn't that the whole belief of what we are? That we have been brought forth in the confinement of a human womb. And that not only have we been brought forth that way, but we've been expelled out of the womb. The umbilical cord has been cut. Now we're cut off. And now we're totally separate. But the beauty is that in that inner genesis of being, that has never gone on. It cannot conceive anything in confinement. It can only do what it is. It can only bring forth in the unlimited mind. And so its inner conceptive ability is totally unlimited. So therefore, its creation is unlimited. It's boundless. And that's what we are. As the creation of life, we are unlimited. We are boundless. So it's just that we, as I say here, its creation, have unwittingly lost touch with the force that endows us. We've unwittingly separated to some minor or major degree from that law, that genetic law. And to the degree that we have separated ourselves, we have created for ourselves distortions and deceptions. And we've accepted those distortions and deceptions and aberrations as if they were real, as if this is exactly what I am. This visage that I present to you is what I am. And it started out as a little baby, and it grew through these stages, and it now looks like this, and so forth. But no, all I really have to do is rediscover my fundamental building blocks and rehook in to the law of life, the law of the genesis, the self-genesis of life. And then it recreates me in its image. So the beauty is that from the science perspective, as we go out from the law of life, we don't have to do anything. It's already there. We just take the position of life and we sail with it as it unveils its creation as us. And that is so comforting. It is just so comforting that I don't have to do this. It is doing it for me. It cannot leave me in an erroneous position. It will not leave me in an erroneous position. It is going to make sure that I reconnect with that genetic law, with a light that comes from within. I'm going to follow every thread until I rediscover that law, until I allow it to work for me, until it is continually generating that which I am in the image and likeness of being itself. It's a foregone conclusion. It's going to do it. We can rejoice in it. I do rejoice in it. I invite you all to rejoice in it. We are going to lift out of our illusionary sphere of influence. We are going to re-engage the full might of the law of our eternal creation. It is a glorious adventure. We are in the midst of doing it every single moment. And we are being successful right here and now. I guarantee that we are being successful right here and now.